Hello and welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Mean, joined by Brian Brushwood.
Hello, 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 hello.
And Mr. Justin Robert Young.
Hello, friends.
Well, we were hoping to see the what they call the wet rehearsal of the Artemis II mission. The Artemis II is the mission to send astronauts, American astronauts and one Canadian, around the moon in this kind of figure eight trajectory, and as a precursor to testing out the Orion space capsule and the Artemis III mission, where we would then be landing astronauts on the moon. The rocket, by the way, which we've talked about the rocket it's using, the SLS, for well over a decade, probably since this podcast started and all the problems with this stack. It was supposed to be the faster, easier way back into space by just combining things from Saturn V and the space shuttle, two programs famously launched or initiated, you know, probably almost actually in the early 60s.
By the power of slide rules, it worked once.
Yeah, and it's that, oh, we'll just do this. Like you know, the people who built that retired 40 years ago, right? You know, but that was it was we've gone into that into detail and how the SLS was nicknamed the Sentinel Launch System. And it was just really felt like a handout to a bunch of different contractors that had been around forever and whatnot. And the thing was supposed to do faster, cheaper, easier. It was none of those things. And, you know, it uses liquid oxygen and hydrogen plus solid rocket boosters. And, you know, there are challenges there. One of the problems of liquid hydrogen and the reason that both SpaceX and Blue Origin and Rocket Lab and the others don't use that is like, it's just too much of a pain in the ass because it's a hydrogen's tiny and whatnot. So they went to go do the wet rehearsal and they had a problem with a leak, and they've always had problems with leaks with this system. So not necessarily anything major, but again, it means, hey, yeah, there's part of the plumbing, we got to go fix it. So that got pushed back like another week or so to try to do that. If they can pass the wet rehearsal and everything works, then we'll actually, you know, load people on it and send it around the moon. But I don't want to be the space pessimist here. The other problem is for Artemis III, which is supposed to land, and the ideal date is 2028, which sounds far off, but we realize like, no, that's 23 months from now. Or, you know, 14, you know, like coming up fast. So anyhow, that date, in order for this mission to work for Artemis III, what they're trying to do is they have to send the Orion spacecraft to the moon, and then it will dock with another vehicle, and that vehicle will then escort astronauts down to the lunar surface, then they'll go back up to or do their stuff, then they go back up to Orion, and then go back to Earth. That other vehicle is the HLS, which is supposed to be being built by SpaceX.
Yeah.
And HLS is huge, it's massive, it's impressive, it's great. And when you watch the demo video, it was awesome. There's just kind of a couple parts they left out, which is in order to get the HLS to the moon into that trajectory, it'll take a lot of fuel, which means they have to fuel it in space. And anybody want to guess how many times they have to send up a Starship with a fuel tanker to fuel it?
Oh, I don't know. One, five, 100?
We don't know. Could be 12, could be 20.
Well, okay. My response is, man, we haven't spent enough time with my head wrapped around Starship being a working, functioning thing yet for me to even begin playing that game of how many things. Yeah. But I feel better. Less like an idiot.
No, hell, remember, I owe you three pies in the face, Brian, because you lost that bet.
Sure.
That's how I remember it. I've got, you know, Starship behind me. I'm excited, you know, but it's that thing of where you doing one miracle is hard, two miracles incredibly hard, three miracles is really, really hard. And we're at this point now where this mission is supposed to go happen in 2 years and, you know, less than, you know, in 2 years. And we haven't even had any demonstration of in-flight refueling, which I think technically this thing can be solved. I don't think there's a physics problem. I think it's an engineering problem. But the problem is that when you realize you've got 5,000 engineering problems to solve and not 500, that makes it really, really, you know, tiresome. And like, I think Elon Musk is probably the most capable engineer like all time. Like I hands down, I can be frustrated with him by any number of things. And then I can say that, like, yes, this thing you said here is really cool, and I can't wait for you to build this. And I can say, yep, this is just this is your P.T. Barnum side of you that you said this thing. It's not real. It's like, you know, we get a Model 3 and then we get a Hyper, you know, we get, you know, autonomous, we promise of autonomous driving in 2015. And now we're waiting, you know, Grok 4.20 is 7 months late. You know, it's this sort of like, sometimes he's absolutely can knock it out of the park. And then some of the things too, like remember when they did the first Starship demos, they showed us the idea of like, what if it could carry people from one part of the earth to the other? And that's going like they were going to be doing Saturn V size launch to send people to the other side of the planet and everybody's going to be okay with it. I'm okay with it. You know, like that's not a reality in any version of our current timeline. And yet that was how he sold kind of SpaceX continue funding and do that. And now we're centers in space, which you can talk about, but I'll just stop for here for right now. The Artemis is all right. I'm worried about Artemis.
Well, which are you worried about whether or not, because really the question is not whether or not we can or whether or not we should or whether or not the question is simply one of, does humanity currently have the will, the political will to see this through? And it could be, if you miss that threshold moment, look, there's a specific moment the crowd wants the beat to drop. And if the beat doesn't drop at that moment, they may go get a Diet Coke while they're waiting to see whether or not that beat's ever going to drop. And then funding dries up. That's a relatable metaphor about beats dropping and lunar schedules.
Well,
And Diet Cokes.
Thank you. I'm glad we're all on the same page here.
So we had this war, you know, it was between Blue Origin, kind of a couple of providers, but mainly between Blue Origin and SpaceX to try to get the contract for HLS. And SpaceX, which has, you know, an incredible track record with Falcon 9, and I think now technically is pretty amazing, you know, won the contract. And that really, Blue Origin was surprised that they didn't get that. Now we're in this position of we're like, hey, you know, Elon, miracle maker, maybe could you go show up in Texas and go work some of your magic? Because we're getting nervous here.
Yeah.
Well, so what is the latest on seeing Starship be an actuality? Do we know where we're at on that meta?
That silence you hear is nobody knows.
Okay. All right. As that's yet again, Brian is up to date by not knowing.
My audio keeps clicking out, guys. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's fine. That's fine. To be honest, theatrically, it said everything it needed to say.
I wish I knew the concept, but that's cool.
The question is, Starship, is it any closer to happening?
Yeah. Do we know where we're at in terms of it being a real thing? And then hilariously, it was met with awkward silence, which is, I think, exactly how a lot of people are feeling.
No, I mean, they're making progress. They have more launches coming up. It's an incredible achievement. I don't want to dismiss it and fall into the, you know, like it is an amazing, when it is functioning, doing what it's going to do, it's great. And we're getting into the thing of like, you know, it's the you know, Elon would say like, you know, I get told that, you know, I can't do it, but then I get told, oh, it's too late. But it's like, well, sometimes things haven't delivered, like we fully autonomous driving still isn't there. You know, a lot of their, you know, Hyperloop kind of didn't come anywhere. But again, that I won't put that fully on him. But like, there's a number of times where it's like, you said this thing, I like this other thing, because that made sense. The thing sounded like it just sounded cool. But yeah, I think Starship is real. It's just the time frame for HLS is, you know, made a promise to the government, like, we're going to deliver this thing, we're going to help astronauts. And, you know, there's a world where SLS is working and SLS is able to deliver Orion to orbit and SpaceX isn't able to provide the thing they said they would.
Yeah. So the big question, I don't know how much of it got lost in the audio hiccup, but the question is, do you think we run the risk of running out of political will before Artemis goes anywhere? Like, does it just evaporate as like appearing to be an unserious venture?
Uh,
I would love to believe that's another theatrical, very intentional silence.
I wish it was. Very good, Pine. You know, it's a thing I'm going to have to think about a little bit more to give you a good answer. So I'm going to get back to you.
By the way, it's two for two, because the question was whether or not we're just going to see political will evaporate before there's a chance.
Yeah, it gets to be the people aren't quite aware of it now, but we're going to start, I think, attention come to it. It'll be one of these things that people are going to start to go, oh, wait, what? And then, you know, it's going to be a pressure on SpaceX to sort of say, hey, SpaceX is planning to do an IPO. They just did this merger with XAI.
Yeah.
And that's going to be a big, you know, I think that they're going to get a lot of public scrutiny they haven't had before from Wall Street. And they're going to start asking, like, hey, this contract, what's the time frame here? Where's this? What's that? And I don't think that, we're seeing.
My opinion is this will happen because the political win on it for whoever gets it, whoever is in the last chair in the game of musical chairs, is going to be tremendous. Like, if you can pull this off, if you're the president that gets back to the moon, you are... You know, I can't imagine a thing, especially in a splintered society, that will bring the world together, like America doing the thing that America does, putting, you know, men and women on the moon. And so it's like, that will happen. The question is when, and the question is at what cost. If you see it explode in its cost, then no. I mean, it'll be... it'll face headwinds, and that's how it would die. But if there's one thing that politicians like spending money on, it's on things that make them look good, and this will make politicians look good.
Well, part of it is it's like based upon, like, it's a fixed price. Basically, SpaceX agreed to this. We'll do it for that. That's what really hurt Boeing with the Starliner, was Boeing did that and went way over budget and was never able to successfully complete their mission. Do that. SpaceX is in a position to have to deliver. And I mean, SpaceX can do that. I don't doubt that SpaceX can do this. It's just sort of the time frame. But meanwhile, what's interesting is Blue Origin, Jeff Bezos, has gone ahead and they have said, hey, we're not going to do any more of the new Shepard missions, which is the ones where they would send celebrities up to the Kármán line in space, and is now focusing entirely on reusability in the New Glenn, which is their big, you know, orbital rocket, trying to work on a version of their space lander, moon lander, that doesn't need multiple refueling in orbit. Because I think that Bezos, I think he's ready to just sort of step in and say, hey, we got this.
I mean, you know, Jeff Bezos, somebody that I think has had a lot of really cool ideas, has put a lot of money toward projects that I don't think he had the right staff for. And certainly Blue Origin, I think, falls into that bucket. There's a certain newspaper in Washington, D.C. that I think probably falls into that same bucket as well. There's been a lot said that our current tech moment has kind of revitalized the imagination of a lot of some of our pioneers from the last era of technology. And I certainly hope that that's the case for Bezos, because if Blue Origin's a player, then we're just going to have more access to space. And I think that that's a really cool idea.
Yeah.
Do you think that the announcement of focusing in this direction?
Sorry, not hearing you, Brian. Sorry, Brian. Just weird cuts out on, I'm kidding.
Oh, okay.
Jesus, you can't do that. That's not fair. You can't.
Like, I can't see how to even know he's talking.
You can't accidentally screw up the podcast and then intentionally screw up the podcast.
This announcement of a repivoting to a very serious venture, is that an indication that sort of that was the window of space tourism? It came and it went. Like that, if they're not lining up to make money, taking people to suborbital flight, have we seen all the space tourists that we're likely to see?
No, it was always a terrible business. Space tourism was always going to be a terrible business. And well before person go on one of those things, we talked about this here, that if you're the first space tourist, it's really, really cool to tell people, I spent this much money to go do it. By the time you're the 300th person to go into space, it's like, oh, yeah, everybody else did that too. Oh, you paid the same price? oh, you know, it's just literally diminishing commodity because it's, you know, not like a running a K2 or, you know, or excuse me, not like running a marathon or climbing Mount Everest or whatever like this. It's just, hey, I did the thing that everyone else did. And this, you just get it, the high perceived value of it just declines rapidly. That's why luxury things are nice for scarcity. When they're longer scarce, it's not cool. So there was never going to be like a really big market purely for that, considering the cost and what you're, hey, I was in space for 40 minutes and I tried to tell Jeff Bezos how weird it was. And he just wanted to spray champagne in my face. Nobody in particular. So I think that there could be, but it's just the cost. I think for Blue Origin, it's like, hey, what do we want to do? If we want to go conquer space and build a really big business that's actually commercially viable and much, much bigger than anything else, I need our best engineers working on that problem and not, you know, launching Katy Perry and her friends into, you know, the stratosphere.
So to my question, like, are we past the, like, is the window closed now? Or are we going to not see a lot of space tourism?
My opinion is you are done with that version of it. You are done with the like super high ticket, you know, multimillionaire to billionaire bucket list version of it. I think anybody who wanted that ride kind of took that ride, and it does not scale downward unless you have fully reusable stuff that's going to go up there. I think that we are not in any way done with space tourism in general. I think that we are done with space tourism at that price point. If we are in a world where you have constant access to space and now going to space becomes something that you buy for four figures and not, you know, if you have to ask, you can't afford it level money, then, you know, I think people will go to, would be happy to go visit space, but it's like, it has to come as an offshoot to commercial and military kind of constant access to space, in my opinion.
If you're Bezos and you're spending tons of money on the new Shepard program, meanwhile, you're watching how much SpaceX is making from Starlink, you have to be asking yourself, okay, do I want to be spending, you know, do I want to be in tourism or do I want to be in global communications infrastructure?
Because one of them is money right now. Somebody will cut you a check today for the idea that you are going to be in that business.
Yeah, and you're gonna, and it increases. Like you know, when I have Starlink and works great. It's amazing. I actually got two Starlinks, you know, and that's a great business. You know, somebody goes to space once, they're never gonna go back again at that level because it's like you'd literally scratched it off, you know. And I think that there will be tourism will be part of the space industry, but it'll be such a small part. It's like, you know, people don't, you know, there's reasons why, like, you know, putting passengers on planes and boats was never really the biggest part of those businesses, and ones that were dependent upon that just went bankrupt, you know, or just have really struggled. And space is the same way. That it'll be a tiny part of it, but, you know, I think we're just seeing the trajectory. You know, getting hundreds of millions of people to pay $80 a month for internet service, you know, seems viable.
Can we talk about data centers in space? This is a big thing. Obviously, it was a part of the XAI SpaceX merger today on TBPN. Sam Altman was asked about it, whether or not he believes space data centers would provide meaningful compute to OpenAI in the next 2, 5, and 10 years, for which he said no to all of them. Just wishing Elon well. There's skepticism abound about the world of AI. The stock market took an absolute crap despite all of the companies having really good earnings because people are nervous about CapEx spending. And then it rebounded and pushed beyond 50,000 points literally as we are recording this right now. But data centers in space seems to even be stretching the line of credulity for some of the biggest dreamers, the biggest big thought thinkers in this space, like Sam Altman. What is your thought on data centers in space, Mr. Main?
In a long enough timeline, cool. A long enough timeline, I think it makes cool. It'll be cool, but you have an order of operations and when things make sense and when they don't. Right now, it's a terrible idea. It's a marketing gimmick. It is literally a marketing gimmick. When you look at, when you parse through and you understand it, when you're talking about it, a time frame, even within 10 years. It is literally the size of these racks, how heavy they are, the cost to put these into orbit, the availability of power, all the problems we haven't solved, the energy usage, and the why would you do it? It comes down to, well, cheaper energy. Well, you factor in what it costs to put something into geosynchronous orbit, you factor all that. That's a tiny percentage of your cost is what you're going to be spending on energy when you think about everything else associated with it. Plus the fact you can't update your hardware very easily. Andrew hates this kind of space. Like, no, I actually wrote one of my first investment checks was to my former manager at OpenAI, Ashley, who you all know, who went off in Crystar, which is a company working in space-based materials and stuff. They ran the first LLM in space. And I'm like, I'm very much into this area, but also it's kind of the curse of knowledge where you're like, I get people like, oh, that makes so much sense. Like, yeah, it makes so much sense if all these other things are working. But like I just brought up, we haven't even solved this refueling thing for, Starship. And now they're telling me, oh, we'll be putting these data centers in space. Why? Well, because the energy will be cheaper. It's like, well, I can put a battery on a solar panel, and do that. And it's just the arguments fall apart. Like, and also you have this other issue of whenever we have a major solar event, we worry about how that's going to affect satellites and you have to rad hard these things. When we were running very long, big inference experiments in, for OpenAI, whenever solar weather was a thing you thought about, and now you're like, we're going to expose all of that into this and we're going to put this massive infrastructure. What did Putin threaten to do, or his, what did Russia threaten to do to Elon when they got upset about, Starlink access was, hey, we're going to just start nuking your stuff. So, hey, we're going to go put our most valuable critical infrastructure out there in space where I can just do, one of these, scenarios that takes everything out. It is a fine, hey, wouldn't it be cool thing to talk conversation, but to go out there and say, oh, we're raising money to go do this thing now, to me, is absolutely a joke.
Yeah.
So what, pretend I wasn't here for most of the argument. Pretend I just got here. What is the pitch that people are making for data centers in space?
You would have 24-hour solar. You have the amount of solar energy that hits the ground versus what's available in space. And granted, some people are, I get people who may be trying to pitch me on space-based. I'm like, okay, are you talking about, low Earth orbit, or are you talking about geosynchronous? And they just go, well, what's the difference? I'm like, well, if you want to have like nearly 24-hour solar, then you got to put it in geosynchronous, which is a different, and it's just, you realize like, man, this is, they just think of like space, solar, cheap, sounds great, So the argument is that you would have access to, infinite number of solar energy out there in space, and your energy costs would be effectively zero because all the solar energy. So there's I think there might be a thing at some point of a hybrid thing. You start putting inference things onto satellites that are serving communications. But part of the problem is if you're trying to take advantage of that 24 hour, always in sunlight, you're at geosynchronous orbit, which is like a 500 millisecond delay. So you're not going to be running training runs up there with that kind of delay. You're not going to be doing anything at scale. Like that could be doing 100,000 GPU training clusters, things like this. You might be like serving, Grok queries or whatever from there cheaper. But the argument I bring up is this, is that when GPT-3 launched, it was 1,000 tokens for 6 cents, right? For 6 cents, you could get about 1,000 words would be generated, right? And there was utility there. It was useful, still kind of expensive. We found utility. GPT-4, the model got better and it got cheaper. By the time we are at now a GPT-5 mini model, right, which is a far more capable model than GPT-3, way more, eons better, it's incredibly farther ahead. It's 40 cents per million tokens. I can use the nano model, which was way better, and it's 10 cents per million tokens. So that cost has fallen down. Most people aren't going, my problem is really I got to get this token cost down. That's not the problem. And so I think it's trying to solve for the wrong problem.
So from the pitch being here on planet Earth, a pushback against AI is but energy. And so the proposal is out there in the hopes to close that off and say, But what if that wasn't a problem?
Well, it's, one of the principles of AI is that it's a lot easier to move data than it is to move energy, right? And that you might see more data centers that'll cluster around places where you can get abundant energy really, really fast. Either it's manufactured there, it's pumped out of the ground, or, you know, whatever, right? So you would see data centers in like, you know, the Texas coast and like, you know, the Alberta and stuff like that. And so like, if you can put it next to abundant free energy of the sun, right? Theoretically, now you have solved the thing and now you just need to solve how the data gets down as fast as possible. Then you can move that data around. That's the idea.
And the way to think about it too, is it like, I can see in, again, solar energy orbit is, there's a lot of problems because then if you're trying to, then one reason is I'd see in a long enough time frame, you do things like this. You do build massive solar data centers, you know, at some point. I think that it will happen, but like right now, every 8 months, 9 months, you know, we improve something with algorithmic. Every 18 months or so, the hardware gets better and we're getting better at even making better hardware for AI. Like I've shown you guys the demos of Cerebrus and Grok. We've run through there and see how fast this is. So I go put up my satellites in orbit and now I've got to have a commitment to them for an 8, 9, 10 year plan of which they're going to be economically viable. But at the rate at which NVIDIA makes their chips more efficient, chances are by the time I've launched my last part of the first wave, the Earth-based chips are way more efficient. And, you know, if you're counting on everything to flatten out as far as chip efficiency, then maybe, you know, but if we know the chips keep getting more and more efficient, I'm in a data center on Earth. I'm like, oh, I got to replace, you know, 50,000 racks. Okay, that'll take me a couple of weeks to do it. Good. Oh, I got to replace, you know, 50,000 satellites, you know, inference satellites. Like, oh, well, that's going to take a lot of launches and a lot of this, or just, it's just literally the economics don't make any sense at all.
This is about justifying Elon folding XAI into SpaceX.
Yes, that is the narrative. That's what it came from. They talk, why should XAI merge with SpaceX? And it was literally, he needed a story to pitch investors. He needed a story because XAI, I think Grok, you know, a Grok video model like, is actually really good. I think it's gotten much better fast. I think the Grok video model, I think it's actually improved a bit. I don't think it's as good as Veo and Sora yet, but I think for the price and for the speed, I think it's pretty good. I think they've built some good stuff. Their usage numbers aren't there though. XAI is just like the last reported numbers or allegedly the observed numbers we had was something like they did like $150 million in like the third quarter last year, which, you know, maybe making maybe $700 million, whatever, compared to Anthropic doing $8 to $10 billion and OpenAI doing over $20 billion. It's just not a player in that space. It's just not a player there. And so they needed to have this narrative of like, but you see, we understand AI, understand space, we'll do the space-based data center stuff. And it's just, I have SpaceX merchandise all over. There's my Starship. I have hats. I have this. I love SpaceX. I think it's great. I am frustrated and amazed and bewildered by Elon all at the same time over stuff. But the space-based data center, I'm like, this is another, you know, go back and look at when we're looking at the Starship videos of them launching people and look at when that was first published.
Well, yeah, no, the Starship network that's going to take on commercial flights, right?
Yeah.
You know, going from city to city. Which I hope, yeah, be nice. Be nice to get to, you know, London in 30 minutes. Be fun. I could commute.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm a big fan of the idea. I just don't think it's real.
Here's what is real. Patreon.com/weirdthings where you support the show. Thank you guys very much for doing it. Keeping this institution rolling. Yeah. Baby, that's what we're doing. Patreon.com/weirdthings.
Brian?
Yes, sir.
It'll be available soon on Windows, but you know.
Any minute now, Brian. Back there in the past, 1998's gonna get it, I swear.
They've been teasing it from Windows. I feel bad talk. It's like I have a friend in a country that the movie hasn't been released yet. But man, the new OpenAI Codex app.
Amazing.
Explain
what it is for normies.
So I just posted a thing. So like when I was at OpenAI way back in the day, back when they were barely just a research company and, aspirations were like, will anybody want to use this API? They discovered that the models could generate code, which was a surprise because it wasn't explicitly trained on code. It wasn't a model told to be a code model. It was just learned from watching the internet how to do code. And they're like, what if we just train the model on a lot of code? And guess what? They had their first Codex model, which was really good at writing code comparatively. And then that just iteratively improved. And one of the first things we did is we worked with Microsoft to put this into their code editor called VS Code. And that was Copilot. And so Copilot, which is a product by Microsoft, which they call everything now, basically used Codex, the model, to generate code inside of it. It was great. Writing inside VS Code, that was great. But then other companies came in and started to figure out how to build even more better integrations. And then Anthropic started building their own code models, which were really good. And you ended in this place where I've talked about Cursor before, like Cursor's like, you have this like a document editor for your code. You go do your code, you go run it, whatever. Then this sort of escalated where like people started building like Anthropic and OpenAI started building command line tools. Anthropic released Claude Code. Claude Code was a way to let Claude do a lot more stuff on your system and go work with there. And it was just a lot of people had great experiences because it wasn't just locked inside the IDE. It had access to other stuff. And then OpenAI had their version Codex, which worked in the command line and then also worked as a plugin. You could go into VS Code. I started using that exclusively once their Codex model got better. I think Anthropic had the best code model for a while. It's not really a contentious thing to say that. And then I think the Codex model got better. But other people like the Claude model, but I think it became a very heated race. So then OpenAI released Monday an app called Codex, which basically what it is, it's like ChatGPT for code. You go into a folder and you can say, hey, kind of like we showed you before, Brian, we walked you the steps, but now it's just so streamlined. You just literally create a folder and you can say, go build me this inside of here and go run it. You can go set up background automations. You can say, hey, I want you every 2 hours, go check this service and go do this. Or if I'm deploying my code elsewhere, go do that. You can integrate into it. Like it can use Sora. It can use the GPT image generator. You can have it use other models, other stuff like this. It has become an amazing way to code. I've just been having so much fun while I'm supposed to be finishing a novel using this.
So it's a program.
Yes, it's an app.
Yeah, I know that my longtime, very my tech buddy, my college roommate Brady, finally broke and bought his very first Mac computer, as citing that for developing. It's like, I guess I'll just learn the stupid GUI and spend most of my time under the hood in Linux. And, but he crossed the threshold, but I guess I'll be waiting for it to come out in beta.
No, they showed the Windows version's coming. There are a lot of companies that are entirely Windows based that do that. And so it's not like, you could argue like, hey, if we never release on Android, how much money will we lose versus desktop? Like you want to take over certain enterprise stuff. 100%. We have clients for Interdimensional that are completely Windows only. And so like that'll happen fast. Particularly but if you're building an app that you say is great at writing code.
This is ridiculous though, Andrew. This was the biggest launch week since ChatGPT for Claude. Why aren't you talking about Claude? Claude has overtaken its rivals, according to the Wall Street Journal.
I mean, it's Anthropic's hat is doing very great.
It sounds like something happened. Pretend I just got here and tell me what happened.
This is kind of inside baseball. So the Wall Street Journal came out with a piece today that called "The Week Anthropic Tanked the Market and Pulled Ahead of Its Rivals." It is my contention that that article is borderline. Not only is it incorrect, I think it is journalistic malpractice and it is active gaslighting and deception for what is supposed to be the paper of record for the business community. Anthropic is a fine company that does fine stuff. If anything, this week might be known as the week that it began to lose its edge with influencers in terms of having the undisputed number one code model. OpenAI has, you know, there's influencers out there that, especially with Codex and with their brand new 5.3 coding model, has gotten a ton of buzz. It has really, you know, OpenAI has kind of reasserted itself in that position. If you want the biggest, most viral story in AI, it is not with any of the research companies, any of the big dogs. It's this Claude bot, you know, then became Molt, then became OpenClaw. Like, that's the most viral thing. If you look at some of the meetups that they're having in San Francisco, where there's like 1,000 people that all want to turn over their entire computer and lives over to this kind of this native system, that's the biggest viral story. The idea that the Wall Street Journal would say that Anthropic tanked the market, which, by the way, the market now rebounded, it's over 50,000. So it doesn't even make any sense to me.
Here's the two things that I think are absolutely terrible about the Wall Street Journal story. And again, I think there is a great story about Anthropic, the company, the culture, whatever. These are people that had a very different view than OpenAI, co-founders, people who I think are incredibly capable, who went off on their own vision, had to start from scratch, you know, back in, you know, 2020, go do this on their own and go build up a company, or OpenAI had this advantage to do this. And I think they did a fantastic job of doing that. It's hands down, they did a fantastic job. And the fact that people talk about OpenAI and Anthropic for code models and nobody talks about Gemini, you know, the fact that, you know, Anthropic built a better model than Google is a very important story, very, very good story. But what happened Monday, so the Wall Street Journal story, I think, is malpractice for two reasons. So the two things they admitted, they're using this ramp data about, like, for enterprise use, which is just completely BS number to sort of show. And they have this paragraph like, according to ramp, you know, they're Anthropic's taking the lead here. And it's like, well, most people say they don't handle their billing, whatever, all that. And they had one sentence below said, there are some other things that say that's not quite the case. It's like, yes, a lot. But the thing that's one thing, just the bullshit numbers, the two stories they did not talk about, which would really kill the narrative, which I thought was sort of funny. One is they made a big deal early on when Anthropic got a big investment from Amazon. Amazon went and made an investment in Anthropic, and that's pretty big. Amazon invested several $1 billion. And they're like, look at this. Amazon's decided. Well, guess what? Guess who's talking about like maybe a $20 billion investment in OpenAI now?
Old Amazon-y.
Yep. Amazon's looking to do a huge investment in OpenAI, their biggest investment they've done, far dwarfing anything into Anthropic. So all of a sudden, Amazon, one of the biggest enterprise, platform on the deep, AWS, the fucking internet, pardon my language, says, hey, we think we're going to invest in OpenAI, bigger investment in Anthropic. That's kind of a story. That would be a thing that I think a journal that covers Wall Street might want to talk about, but they didn't. The other thing was, the big story yesterday was Anthropic released their new Opus 4.6 model, which some people say there was actually, Anthropic does a tier where they have their high-end model, and they have kind of a lower cost but highly capable model, be Sonnet. The high-end model's Opus, the cheaper model, but really good would be like the Sonnet model, right? Rumor was they had a great new Sonnet model, but then they popped out of the Opus model, and people are saying, we think Opus was maybe actually the cheaper Sonnet model, but because they can charge Opus prices, they went to do it. They released this Opus 4.6 model, which was better than like OpenAI's 5.2 Codex, was a little bit, but just marginally better. It was better, but marginally better than OpenAI 5.2 Codex. And then it was like, look, we're lead, we're state of the art, everybody. 30 minutes later, OpenAI released OpenAI released GPT Codex. 5.3. GPT 5, God, the names, being on the inside was hard enough. released GPT 5.3 Codex, their new model, 30 minutes after Anthropic dropped theirs. Guess what? Blew away the Opus 4.6 in certain benchmarks and significantly more capable in those benchmarks there. And so like Anthropic had the lead for 30 minutes, then OpenAI released their code model, which jumped ahead. How much coverage was talked about this in the Wall Street Journal? Zero.
Zero.
Nothing. Nothing. That was the biggest story between those companies yesterday. And they didn't cover that. And
the idea that it tanked the market, that anything that Claude introducing add-ons to their model tanked the market. It's like, no, look, there's a huge story about skepticism about capital expenditure on data centers. That's a huge story. That is, it's quite possibly the business story of our times. But like Claude didn't do anything about that. There wasn't any, no. I mean, that wasn't the reason why people faded Google and Amazon, because even after they had good earnings reports, they did that because they're terrified that they're overspending on data centers.
Yeah. It's sad because like that coverage reads like there is a venture fund that's heavily invested in Anthropic. Nice people, I've met them. Wall Street Journal used to just like run their graphics with their logo in it. And then at least they don't do that now, but I'm like, I get it. We know who your lead is. We know who your stories are coming from. There are great stories and great things have happened within Anthropic to talk about. I think that is it. But if you're trying to make the care, you know, if you're trying to make this case by squinting and looking at it and say, this is where they are now. This is where like, that's weak. And I can show you some data that shows too, that like there's, their code advantage from a usage point of view may have been eroded considerably. Not necessarily just by OpenAI.
It's also kind of naked. We're in a race to an IPO, right? And there's been rumors about OpenAI. Yeah. There's been rumors about Anthropic. And so that's what all of this is about. That's what the Super Bowl ad's about. That's what that story is about, is you are building the narrative. This is the drumbeat, boom, 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 leading up to the IPO. And what happens before an IPO, for folks who are, you know, unaware of it, is you begin to go, you're having conversations now with banks and institutional investors and mutual funds and stuff like that about why your stock is worth it, why it is a must have in the portfolio of these gigantic financial institutions. Like that's what you do. And you can't do that unless you've got ammunition. And so what Anthropic wants to point out is that what is the problem with Anthropic as an IPO? They're not the big dogs and they are not punching above their weight. They're an also ran. And so that article, it's about the week that Anthropic overtook its rivals, no longer an also ran, Anthropic's at the top of the hill. What's the other thing? They have no consumer mind share. They have no consumer footprint. So Super Bowl ad. Oh my God. This is the no ads consumer AI. Now, whether or not that's smart or good or truthful, I've got my own very strident opinions on, but there's no doubt the motivation is to try to fill in holes in the resume so you can sell these financial institutions and then do a successful IPO.
Yeah. I get my dad, my dad reads the Wall Street Journal, send me this article, like, what about this? And I have to go, well, this was true. Unpack this. This is the data point here, da, 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 da. And I see that. I see the effect that they have of where, you know, it's sad because it's like, I think, the Wall Street Journal is generally good, but it's just a thing where, and I think they could make the case where like Anthropic's their darling. That's fine. I think it's just when you literally put your thumb on the scale and admit the two major stories that literally should affect that narrative. And like, you're like, oh, would your reader be better informed to know this? Yes. Why didn't you include it? It's like, well, it's like political journalism. But I would say like Anthropic had like, you know, I think that the ad they did, they got attention. It did the thing that wanted to do. We can, you know, I could argue.
Can we take a look at the ad?
Let's.
The Anthropic ad, you said?
Yeah. The betrayal.
Then we explain everything they said that's... Yeah.
Betrayal is the ad that will air during the Super Bowl. Here it is.
How do I communicate better with my mom?
Great question. Improved communication with your mom can bring you closer. Here are some techniques you can try. Start by listening. Really hear what she's trying to say underneath her words. Build conversation from points of agreement. Find a connection through shared activity. Perhaps a nature walk. Or if the relationship can't be fixed, find emotional connection with other older women on Golden Encounters, the mature dating site that connects sensitive cubs with roaring cougars.
What?
Would you like me to create your profile?
And audio listeners, it says ads are coming to AI, but not to Claude. In terms of just stirring the pot and stoking the fear, that's a brilliant wedge marketing. If this was a political attack ad, I'd give it 10 out of 10.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I don't know whether or not there will always not be ads in Claude. I also don't know exactly what people right now. There are no ads in any, in any chat bot. So it is pre-budding, as they say, pre-rolling the argument. It certainly drew a reaction from OpenAI, which is who they're talking about. As OpenAI did announce that there's going to be ads coming to the free and go tiers of ChatGPT. I don't know. I mean, Brian, you're the marketing man here. Usually, whenever you have a ad that states a thing, people tend to remember that thing with the company whose name and logo that you see, right?
Right. Like this is a case. The comp here would be, oh man, I'll have to think of it to access it, but it's like you associate with, it's like, we're not that thing. It's like, meanwhile, you said your company name and the thing. And it's like, yeah, but other people
didn't
are
say
the thing.
Anybody else.
Right. Exactly.
So it's like, you know, from my worry from their perspective, such that it is, would be that like, oh, okay, so Claude's the cougar app.
That's kind of what cougars, I'm left remembering.
Yeah. I just wondered which person at the Anthropic executive team in the middle of the meeting's like, you know, the problem with the internet is all these cougar ads. All these ads you get for cougars. Like just everywhere people are generally older women, just like, like, you know, and you go look at these sites, the next thing you know, you're just getting inundated. We got to put that in the ad. And they're like, wait, what? You know, it's a funny ad, and it got people talking. I think, to kind of unpack some of the frustration from OpenAI is that, one, that's not the way ads like are going to work in ChatGPT. They've been very explicit about that. It's not part of the conversation thing, whatever. It's a completely siloed, separate thing. And so that was sort of a disingenuous way to suggest that interaction would work if you're trying to say that was OpenAI. I would say that this is, you know, there's a lot of people who from OpenAI went Anthropic and some people went back and forth. There's a lot of friends, a lot of people there. And then this is the first time somebody kind of pulled a knife, you know, to sort of say like, well, we're going to go for you directly, which inevitable, you know, but you know, Anthropic is kind of the cool hipster chill out people. It was like, wait, you guys are the ones to do this, you know? So, one more thing I'd say, but if I was the person trying to sell ads at OpenAI, I would be over the moon for this, because now every CMO at a company is now going, wait, does this mean I'll be able to buy ads on ChatGPT?
like, are they going to be as good as that cougar ad? Because that'd be amazing. Can you do ads like that?
OpenAI billions of dollars. So,
My thought was initially, I'm like, oh my God, this is a great digital ad, you know, because it's speaking directly to its audience online. And then I read it was a Super Bowl ad, and I'm like the American football Super Bowl, like the one that's on Sunday Super Bowl, like the like, you know, people who have no idea what the hell a chatbot is are watching the Super Bowl. Like, you're going to do a bank shot where you don't mention anybody else by name. And it's also a thing that's not happening right now. Like,
buying an ad at the place where people are most excited to see ads to tell people, hey, we're too good for ads.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I think you are going to have a better chance of most of America being able to sing along to Bad Bunny than you will have them explain exactly what that ad is supposed to mean. Now, I do think that the ad is effective. I do think that the ad is mostly effective as just baseline anti-AI fear-mongering.
That's exactly, if reading tea leaves from the outside, I would say that internal testing shows that Anthropic is uniquely well naturally positioned when the issue, like think of it as a political attack ad, they automatically win if the issue is trust and robots. Then all your ad money should go to raising general anxiety, raising awareness about the trust of the blurring of the lines of ads.
And I would agree with you that they believe that about themselves. I don't think that anybody who, like if we're talking about the broader consumer market for this, I don't think anybody has opinions on really anybody right now. I think that everything is experimental and people have opinions about the tech. They have opinions about AI and they have opinions about whether or not it's good or bad or, you know, useful. But I don't know if anybody really, I think people's opinion about OpenAI are probably right now being shaped by Google products or, you know, an Anthropic is there. The opinion about Anthropic is being shaped by ChatGPT. Like, everything is so clustered together. Now, eventually it is going to break out. And if you're looking to do an IPO and you're building these data centers, like, you know, they're Howard Johnson's in the 50s, then like, yeah, you know, you're now the main character of all American business. So I guess you better start acting like it. But I don't understand why you would just nuke the idea of trust in a chatbot. And that's what that does is like, you will never be able to fully trust a chatbot brought to you by a chatbot company. It's like, awesome. Like, I don't totally get it, but it's effective at making people not like your product.
I don't know. That I would say that its market distinction, Anthropic's entire market distinction is that they, whether or not the facts bear this out, their forward-facing position is that we care most about creating a pro-social chatbot, which is why they, you know, invest in hiring philosophers to craft their soul doc and all of that stuff. If that's the game in your unique selling position, I mean, again, as a political attack ad, you know, bang the drum on the wedge issue.
Yeah, I think, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. You know, they have the problem, like their name recognition. I saw a survey where they put Anthropic's name in there with a made up company name and asked people like your favorability of it. It was basically the same as the made up company. So they still don't have the same sort of registration there. It's interesting too. I'm just watching two deer run across my backyard. What's interesting, OpenAI has like 900 million. And the reason they did the ads, they said to do the ads is because when you have that many, you have that big of a free tier, it's huge. It's the cost on that is very, very outsized. And so they wanted to figure out ways they continue to provide great products. And, you know, there's a difference, like, you know, OpenAI tries to be, say that they're more generous when it comes to the amount of requests you get. Their web app for the free tier has, you know, voice. WebEx free tier does not, you know, and there's a differentiator there. And OpenAI is excited about the idea. Once we start monetizing, we can do this. OpenAI doesn't, you know, has no plans to put ads. Every time I ask about ads in the pay in anything above the Go, the Go is their very cheap plan, but the base, like the regular plus plan or the pro plan, they're like, nope. I'm like, can I even turn it on? They're like, they want to be very, very clear that if you're paying for the regular plan, you're not going to see ads. They're very, very adamant about that. And it makes it sort of an interesting point because it's like, okay, what product is Anthropic pitching there? Your free tier, which you don't really have as many anywhere near users for, you know, and I think that may go up. And I've heard, you know, I've talked to investors who talk to Anthropic people like, oh, they really don't want consumer. Like, well, why are they spending millions of dollars on ads for consumer? Like, to get OpenAI to do it. I'm like, oh, because you don't think OpenAI is going to spend tons of money to get consumer. Like, you think that you're trapping them like, haha, you'll trip over 900 million users and then we'll win. Just seems silly. So it is a very interesting sort of approach towards it. Would they have been better off of just a QR code to get Claude? Yes.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, we'll see. You know, these are very personal conversations, what we are finding out is that this tech is is personally affecting. You care about it. You rely on it. It matters where it comes from. And so in that respect, I can understand Anthropic saying, look, we care. Look at us. We care. And they are a challenger brand, you know, that that they are in the Pepsi position. And so they are going to do more of taking shots at the people ahead of them. And also it's like, you know, if you're just here for the cat fight, Anthropic versus OpenAI is like from the long storied history of Silicon Valley blood feuds, you know, now we got a freshie. That's exciting.
Well, and plus also OpenAI, until Sam Altman is no longer there, I'm going to assume he'll continue to be the voice and the face of OpenAI's position. And Sam Altman is incredibly nuanced in his responses to these things. He comes across as very patient and above the fray for a lot of times, for a lot of things. Claude, if this is the game that Anthropic is inviting, they get infinite sock puppet accounts to, here's another wedge issue. Well, now what about this? And then, and whereas OpenAI, by being solid, reliable, and the same person, doesn't have access to the same number of dopamine spikes, the exciting thing. So that'll be interesting.
Yeah. I mean, they're playing a different game. They're playing the, like, they're playing the, like, they want to beat Apple game.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Anthropic is throwing sticks into OpenAI's wheels because they're behind them, but like,
which is the right move to make from third or fourth or fifth place.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I my assumption is that there were some personal, this is a personal boiling over moment for kind of simmering frustrations.
Being on the inside, when you hear, hey, they're leaving. Oh, what are they doing? Are they going to go create a new company? No, they tell us they're going to do a research lab. They're not going to compete with us. And I'm like, bullshit. They're going to do everything we do. No. They're serious. They just want to focus on research and safety, not trying to push the frontier. That's what they're going to do. I'm like, maybe they convince themselves, but that's not where it's going to be. And it's fast forward. Check out this sick ad Anthropic took out for the Super Bowl going after OpenAI. I'm like, yeah, I think that's part of, like, it was where, like, wait, didn't you guys say, and then now you're this. And it's like, okay, are we here now? This is where we're here. You know, all right. If this is where you want to stake that you are, then that's, I think Anthropic has to think about that to say, okay, you can be a great competitor. They are amazing competitor with OpenAI. I think they do great stuff, but your mantle of heaven and we're the higher ground, that ended. That ended at the Super Bowl. That literally ended with that ad. You're now just another AI company doing whatever you can to convince other people that your opponent's product is not as good as yours, which is fine and fair, but you're a company now. You're not a mission. You're not a philosophical movement. You're a company trying to gear towards an IPO, trying to, you know, maximize everything you can, pulling every lever you can, and whatever you thought you were going to carry with you as far as having this sort of, like, you know, higher, more noble sort of sense, you just said, no, we'll take the ad. We'll do that. And I don't think it's wrong. I think it's just being realistic. I think that's, they need to be real. My argument is they need to be realistic. The day they left, they're going to have to be very realistic about what they are. They're a company. They're a business. They're a business in competition with OpenAI. They can talk about, like, oh, we want to prevent a race effect. We want to do this. And we're going to talk about, write these papers about all where the future needs to be and all that. But, like, you are now incentivized towards winning. It's the same as Google's incentivized towards ads as a company completely driven by ads, and Facebook the same thing. You are now incentivized towards winning the AI race. And that part of that means IPO share. Part of it means ads. Part of it means, like, that. Like, you're not what you thought you were going to be. You just have to see what you are. And, you know, keep building cool stuff, which they have done. Yeah. You know, I think Anthropic's built some great stuff.
Got any picks?
I got a pick. I got a pick. Everyone needs to, my pick is plane tickets. You got to buy a plane ticket to get on a plane and come to Florida. Florida is the subsection of my, of plane ticket picks. I picked Florida, and time of year should be early March, like around
the March 2nd or 3rd. And you should hop on a plane, go visit Clearwater, Florida, and see a 1 year, a full day workshop with whoever happens to be giving one that day. It looks like, hold on, whatever. I'm going to scampocalypse.com. And then here, my pick is come on out to the 1 day deception workshop with me and Perry Carpenter in Clearwater, Florida. We're basically, it's a 6-hour workshop. You could probably get your boss to pay for it. You'll learn the cutting edges of security awareness training from the guy who put deepfake scams, LLM scam bots, on the map at DEF CON a couple years ago, and somebody who spends live streams making deepfakes every day. We're also going to teach you the psychology behind a scam, and it's good. This is all the best content from the World's Greatest Con lecture that I did for the government and for from Scam Sasquatch of the Supernatural and all of Perry Carpenter's best stuff. It's going to be a fun, very enlightening workshop day. You can go to scampocalypse.com and it'll take you there.
Very cool.
I have been going back and forth to San Francisco, and United Airlines has movies that have received awards, nominations on its in-flight system for free. So I've been watching movies, and I watched one battle after another on the way there. But I really want to make my pick the one I watched on the way back. So a little film that I discovered that none of my friends have ever heard of before, called Weapons. And I have to say that I very much enjoyed Weapons. It was with one kind of plot thing, it's a very well put together script. It's an extraordinarily well structured script. It is a genuinely creepy movie, and I am not a fan. I'm not a big jump scare horror fan. So I liked outside of the first 40 minutes where there's a lot of jump scare and suspense horror. I really, really enjoyed it. I thought if you like a coherent mystery, a horror mystery, then you will like Weapons, a movie I discovered.
I like it. You know what? I like it so much that I'm going to invent a time machine to have already seen it. Oh, wow. Thank you for the pick, Justin. I really enjoy having the memories. I went all the way back to when it premiered and watched it then. It was really exciting. I took my daughter too. Thank you, Justin. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
We both really enjoyed not knowing what kind of movie it was going to be going into it, and then just falling in love with what it was. It was great.
I very much enjoyed it. I didn't know where it was going, and then when I got to like the explanation, I'm like, "What?" And I go, "Yes, I love this." I'm like was it on my list of what it could be? And then I'm like, "Cool." I thoroughly enjoyed it. I gotta tell you this, Justin. It's one of those movies, though. It's better to like see it when it first came out, and not everybody's telling you, "Oh, you got to see this thing. It's really cool. You're gonna enjoy it."
Well, all right. Don't yuck on my yum. I liked it a lot. I thought it was good. I
wasn't saying any per. I don't know what you're getting. Upset with.
I mean, like, the movie really, really kicks into high gear when Wong comes running out of the woods.
Yeah.
It's very clear why the beginning of the movie does not show faces. It protects, I think, you know, the only kind of weak spot of a story like that. But even then, by the time that you get to that moment, you're already so ensconced in kind of the lore element that it didn't matter all that much. So I loved it. Go watch it. Bunch of kids, Naruto running all over the place.
I'm going to show, I before this podcast started, I gave Codex a task. I said, I went to, my prompt was, I want to build a web app called Weird Things News. I want you to find weird stories on the internet, create images, use GPT image and make something that looks like an old time newspaper. I gave it that prompt. Ready to see?
Yeah.
By the way, that could be a show unto itself. Like, I gave it a prompt and told it to go build a thing.
Oh, wow.
You see this?
Yeah.
Let's see. I asked it to fix that white space, but it took actual stories from the news. Kangaroo halts Alabama interstate troopers from roadside. It made its own like dithered, you know, like Wall Street Journal style old timey newspaper illustration of that. It did that with like the sheep and diapers here. So it did all of this. It created all the images for the stories, the bees, all this. It has a classified section. For sale, the haunted jukebox plays only songs you forgot existed. Coins all except nickels and unresolved feelings. barter, we'll trade 2 jars of Moon Jam for 1 reliable map to the shortcut everyone keeps whispering about near mile marker 7. These are actually really cool. Let's see. Real estate, cozy, 1-bedroom observatory tower, excellent moonlight, occasional back council meetings on Thursdays, includes trapdoor and tea shelf. And then it made some comics, which we can take a look at. Let's read Area 51 rideshare. The driver, so we see an alien driving a spacecraft and trapped by cows and panicking. The driver says surge pricing starts when cows block both lanes and nobody can agree whether crop circles count as legal parking. I don't know. Just some funny, it just made a cryptid support group.
That's great.
Bigfoot says he's tired of blurry photographs. Man proposes mandatory kisses for any future sightings. They have a detective talking to a haunted house. The haunted house insists it did not rattle chains after midnight flames, a noisy chandelier with an attitude problem. No, these are funny. So that was my pick. I just got this nice little source of delight based on asking, you know, make me something funny. You can get to making games. Like you just give it an idea for a game. I saw somebody made a really good version of Pac-Man. So an amazing world we're in. Like literally there I just go. Told a thing to make this thing. And then, you know, that would have been a cool website for us.
Mm-hmm. Codex.
All right, gentlemen, it's been weird.
Bye.